Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, insert random sponsor here, is proud to bring to you its international podcasting champions of the world, Precious Pat Henson, Big Sexy Scott Morris, the main event, Meeples! Welcome to the party, everybody. It is episode quattro? Is that right?
Yeah.
Episode four.
The show notes say episode four.
I don't know. I made a mistake when I tweeted things out last week, and I mixed up episode three and episode four. So anyway, this is officially episode four of season two of Main Event Meeples. You're here with Precious Pat Henson, and I am Big Sexy Scott Morris. I almost just said Sexy Scott Morris. That would have been really bad. And we are here to talk
big
about...
Big Sexy is so much better.
It's totally better, yeah. Well, at least there's a wrestling reference. Wrestling fans will get it. So, and we are here to talk about board games, wrestling, video games, comic books, nerd, geek, fun culture, anything that we like, and anything that we want to talk about. But, as always, before we get started, hey, Pat, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. It was a crud weekend, but other than that, it was good. I woke up Saturday
morning. Why was it a crud weekend?
I woke up Saturday morning with a migraine after just a bunch of things that probably shouldn't have gone into my body, went into my body on Friday.
Ouch.
Like ate just too many of the wrong things or something. I don't know. But
I have learned very heavily from my wife's accident how food can impact your migraines.
Oh,
it's crazy.
It was bad. The I'm still kind of dealing with it to a degree because I didn't want to eat all day Saturday because it felt so bad. And now I'm like, hey, we should eat. I'm lightheaded.
Yeah. And I'm seeing this from the floor up to the ceiling.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So like I have my dinner over here and it goes. Last week was a lot of fun getting to see Danhausen premiere, how neat that was, getting to see a really good episode of Dynamite after 2 weeks of me going, I really wish I hadn't predicted this. And now I'm enjoying myself with the wrestling.
And at the time of recording this, neither of us have had a chance to watch Rampage from this past Friday. We're actually recording this on January 31st, which, holy crap, hell did January go?
Time is linear.
It's
human
escalating.
Perception it is, baby. It's a straight line in human.
I need my perception to slow the F down then.
Yeah, no
it's
kidding.
Ridiculous. So.
No, it very much felt like it flew by. I don't remember being okay with that. I don't remember saying it was all right. I remember, honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, I remember watching Fish on New Year's Eve.
There you go.
Then
Fish the band, if anyone
the band, know. The band Fish.
Not Bobby Fish.
My favorite band, Fish.
Ever. Yeah. Well, Fish probably since before I knew you.
yes.
Yep.
Yeah, it's one of the few things that predates our friendship. But no, I've been a giant Fish fan. And one day I will talk about the nerdery that is being a Fish fan, because it's a whole, oh my God, it's a whole different group of human beings. And I'm going to talk about, outing yourself as a wrestling fan later. Outing yourself as a Fish fan to people who know music is like this. They look at you like
crazy.
Are
talk.
You do a lot of drugs? No. No, I don't even really drink that much,
Nice.
What's wrong?
You're probably going to laugh. If somebody put a gun to my head and said, name me three Fish songs, I probably couldn't. I've never not liked the band.
Yeah.
I've never loved the band. And quite frankly, honestly, probably around mid-90s when everything turned into like Night at the Roxbury. I kind of tuned out of music like very hard. I mean, I was really into music at that point, but it was something that just I didn't like all the pop stuff that was coming out, you know, Bye Bye Bye, all that stuff.
I remember when you were a huge fan of Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, I remember those days too, and thankfully I've changed. So
Well, we all had our days, man.
We all have made our mistakes in life, but it's all good. So, all right. So, if anyone doesn't know, we like to open our show with a thing called the five count. I did get a question right last time we did this, so I'm actually looking forward to this to see what happens here. So, Pat's going to ask me five questions this week. I asked him five questions last week, which you were 0-5 for. You got to get better this year. You were killing me last year. So.
Yeah, in that I answered any questions right.
And I think the one rule for this year is none of the answers to any of our questions should be Lex Luger. So
that's fair.
Yep. All right, fire it up, man.
And for what that means, you have to go back and listen to the first five count about 10 episodes ago.
Yeah, we're not going to tell you which one it is, and you just got to go find it.
Got to go find it. You have to listen to a lot of Main Event Meeples.
It's all good.
Yeah, by the way, my boss is following us now, so I'm
nice. Hi, boss.
Yeah, hi, boss.
Welcome to the party, man. Thanks for hiring Pat. He's very happy with his new job from what he tells me.
Yes, so. I really like it. All right. So we talked about who won the first one, who's been the title holder. Oh, no,
more Rumble questions.
We've talked about a lot of things. Now, everybody who's a wrestling fan and has been a wrestling fan for any length of time knows about, you know, Ric Flair's claim to be the winningest WWE champion of all time, or winningest champion of all time. Like, he's won, you know, however many.
16, according to WWE, world championships.
16-time world champion.
However, doesn't roll as well as five times.
You got to say it five times.
You do, actually. So there's a lot. I'll show up behind you and hit you with a spin-a-rooney if you don't.
Yeah. And, you know, he's close enough to me. That might happen.
It might happen.
Texas, baby. We're, of course, talking about the immortal Booker T. But tonight, and Booker T is on this list.
Oh, really?
Who won the most total titles in their time in WWE?
I am gonna say
this is excluding the 24/7 championship.
It better, because that's
it's not real.
I am gonna go immediately to my gut reaction on this because I know that he is the person that has held the tag team championships the most, although it's with different partners. The Rated R Superstar Edge.
So I just realized when I pulled up this article. Now that I pulled up this article, it might be a lot dated. Let's see how old this article is.
If you're trusting the internet for like data, that's a problem.
I was actually trusting WWE.com.
Oh man, that's not good.
From 2014.
Yuck. Okay, so from 2014 and back. So we're talking 8 years ago. So
last Randy's
8 years,
not on this list.
I was gonna say Randy Orton's a 14-time champion just for the world championship, and that doesn't even count as tag team title reigns and intercontinental and US championship reigns.
So the lowest number on this list is 19.
19 is the lowest. 19 title reigns. What's the most?
31.
31. Wow, that's not Edge. There's no way that's Edge.
Sorry, 32.
32. Man, it might have been Edge, because I mean 12 of those. Kurt Angle really didn't win tag gold. Steve Austin only held tag gold a couple of times with people. He was Intercontinental Champion a couple of times.
Now, one thing that's worth noting, this does include
the Ric US
Flair.
Title.
Ric Flair's on this list. So
sure.
It includes
NWA TV title?
No. Okay. Just WCW.
Just WCW. Gets trickier now. I thought I was confident with the Edge. I'll say Edge. I'll stick with Edge. I'm probably wrong, but I'll stick with Edge.
You are very close. He's number two.
Ah, man.
12-time world champion. 7-time world heavyweight champion. 12-time world tag champion.
Tag team champion.
7-time world heavyweight champion. 5-time intercontinental. 4-time WWE champion. 2-time WWE tag team champion. And 1-time United States champion. the immortal king of awesomeness Edge is number two to hilariously Raven.
What? Raven?
One time, Scotty Polo.
Think about this. Scotty Polo. Johnny Polo is really Johnny Scott. Polo. Yeah. So this is taken into account ECW.
Yeah, so
it's taken into account the hardcore title, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because he was hardcore champion like 17 times or something like that.
Not even close to that.
Not even close to that.
27.
Oh my goodness, that's crazy.
27 hardcore titles.
I wonder what Raven thinks of the 24/7 title.
he cries because it's, you know.
It would hurt my soul if I was Raven. Yeah, it would totally.
Two-time ECW champion, one-time US champion, one-time WCW tag champion. That surprised me that it was only one time, considering how long the Flock was relevant.
Yeah, but he wouldn't really. He was the leader of the Flock, not the...
Yeah, fair.
You don't want the leader of a faction being a tag team champion, unless their name is Lance Storm.
Yeah, fair. And then he's the everything champion. And then one-time WCW light heavyweight champion, which is weird, because when was he ever...
I don't even remember that belt. Yeah, wow, that's crazy. Well, that's pretty close. Edge was number two.
Edge was number two. Slick Rick Flair's number three. Number four, Chris Jericho.
I could see that. I could definitely see Jericho and Randy Orton ahead of John Cena.
Orton is, again, not on this list.
Yeah, but from 2014 to now, he's been world champion four times or three times. Yeah. I mean,
and a lot of the people who are on this list are totally have padded numbers because of the hardcore title. Like,
Crash
Holly is number six.
Oh, good Lord.
With 22 hardcore wins. JBL is number seven with 17 hardcore
wins. That guy can take a long off a short beer.
I can't stand that dude. But like it's absurd how many different titles Big Show won.
He
didn't have a lot of individual reigns. Like he didn't have like 12 or anything like that, but like five
times. Who beat Big Show for the US championship? Because I think he only had one US championship.
Yeah, he only had one reign. He
lost to the up and coming, future superstar, the Doctor of Thuganomics, John Cena.
Yeah, he lost at WrestleMania because I remember Cena AA'd him.
Body slammed him. Yep.
And no, then he AA'd him. He had him over his shoulder.
He slammed him and then he picked him up and AA'd him. Yep. Yeah. It was amazing. So
that's all right.
Okay. All right, question dose.
As soon as you asked that, I was like, I saw this. I was there for this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the same WrestleMania, I think.
I think it was WrestleMania.
Brock Lesnar almost died.
I think so. Yeah, the one where he did the moonsault onto his neck. 19, I think.
It's either 19 or 21.
I think so, yeah.
All right. Numero dos. So, and this is as of... This article.
This is as of 2007.
So I'm gonna
from the Honolulu Press.
No. This is as of 2021. So,
no offense to any of our Hawaii listeners. No. I plan on being there in a year and a half. So,
Hawaii.
My wife went to high school in Hawaii.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
My wife has the weirdest path. She grew up in Kansas, went to high school in Hawaii, and then went to North Carolina for college. Like, why anyone takes that path? Crazy.
Hey, you know what? You take the path you take.
Hey, she found me. That's all I'm happy about. So.
Yeah, as long as she ended up in Austin for a little while.
There you go.
All right. Who has, we go from the high to the low.
Santino Marella.
Not even on the list. Who has the most losses in WWE history?
The most losses in WWE history has to be one of two people.
Okay.
It might actually be one of three people. I would potentially throw Iron Mike Sharp into that mix, but it's not him. I would say it is either the Brooklyn Brawler or slick, badass Barry Horowitz.
No.
Ah!
The Brawler is number three on this list with 1,169 losses.
Good hand.
And he's the most famous enhancement talent of all time.
By
a mile. Yeah. Some other names on this list it was kind of wild to see, like...
Is Iron Mike Sharp on that list?
No, he's not.
Wow, I would have thought he would have been up there.
Cesaro with 784 is the 15.
I'm going to throw up. I'm literally just the fact Cesaro. Ugh, I'm gonna throw up. The man should be like
he should be champion of everything. He really should.
He should be a Grand Slam champion by now.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Goldust 786, Christian 786.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Matt Hardy 793.
Mm-hmm.
One of those at the wrong time.
Yep.
You bring a guy back over.
Yeah.
Anyway, Heath Slater 803, Chris Jericho 833.
Wow, really? Dang, that's amazing.
This one surprised me. Triple H 836.
That's a lie.
Yeah, there's no lie. Way. There's no way.
Unless he jobbed every day while he was Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Paul Levesque, like on his own. Like, yeah, I don't.
Now he won. I think you're looking at the wrong seven times.
Okay.
So, you know, it's sure. But he also, you know, he had some.
The important thing about Triple H is that he won when he needed to win.
Yeah. And to maintain things. Jack Swagga, 838 times.
We the people.
Considering how long he was in the Fed.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot of time on your back. Cody Rhodes, face of the revolution, 883 times.
Face of the revolution. He's not the face of the revolution. Scorpio Sky is the face of the revolution.
Well, until they do revolution again and then they have the ladder match and whatever. Yep. Anyway, The Big Show, 910.
Wow.
Your boy Randy Orton, 1017.
That could have been doubled. I hate Randy Orton.
Yeah. I think Randy Orton oozes talent, he uses charisma, and he's just boring.
Randy Orton is the Rob Gronkowski of WWE. He has a ton of talent, and he's a jerk.
So. Yeah, absolutely. He's just a tool. Dolph Ziggler, 1,104, because he came to show the world. And
another guy.
Brawler.
Oh, man.
The Miz, with 1,182.
Sad.
And number one on this list, Kane. 1,221
really?
Wow, losses.
I thought for sure it would have been a jobber like the Brooklyn Brawler in the 80s and 90s because, I mean, he lost to everybody. That was his job. In fact, I remember when the Brooklyn Brawler won his one match and how crazy everyone was going for him and everything. So.
Yeah, but think about how many times Kane was in the feud because he was basically bulletproof.
Yeah.
And he ate the loss. But then he got the win back by lighting someone on fire.
Right. Or taking the world championship for one day and dropping it the next day,
or shoving Matt Cardona off a stage.
Oh, WWE booking. I could go on for weeks.
All right. Next.
Question number three.
Moving on to gaming. What is the best selling video game of all time?
Ooh.
According to Wikipedia. And it was updated today.
Is this through 2014? Okay, I was just going to ask.
Now.
The best selling video game of all time. Wow. My brain immediately thinks Legend of Zelda, and it immediately thinks Mario Brothers because it's old. Then my brain thinks, well, consoles were more readily available and things like Halo and stuff like that. Call of Duty, the original, were really, really popular. Not everybody PC games. Pokemon could be in there because Pokemon is just insanely high. In fact, I think it might be a Pokemon game. That's a good question. The best-selling video game of all time. I will stick with my gut, and I will say The Legend of Zelda.
Legend of Zelda is not on the top 30. Not in the top 50.
Whoa, that's even worse.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild, though, is number 31 with 25,820,000 copies.
So yep, okay.
The number... I'll start out from
give us top five.
Sure, top five. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds with 70 million copies.
Okay.
Wii Sports, which it came with the console.
Yep.
82,900,000.
That's lower than I would have thought, given that it came with the console.
The EA mobile version of Tetris with 100 million. Grand Theft Auto 5, 155 million.
Okay.
No, 5, the most current one.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then number one, 238,000 units sold. Minecraft.
Million? Oh, Minecraft. Yeah, there you
Sorry, 238 million.
Million. Yeah, it's got
Yeah, Minecraft.
Million. But that also, that's padded as well, because schools use Minecraft for teaching, and there are licenses that they buy that kind of bump those numbers up. Yeah. That's, yeah. Sure. Okay, well, Minecraft's fine. I don't have any problem with Minecraft. I like Minecraft.
Pokemon Red, Green, Blue, Yellow was seventh with 47 million.
Yep.
Mario Kart
8.
The most recent.
Phenomenal game.
47 Phenomenal million.
48 million of those people have beaten me online.
They have. They've beaten me too. I suck at that game. But I love it. It's great.
Yeah,
game.
No, it's phenomenal.
Super Mario was number six. 58 Not bad. Million. All right. Next question.
0 for 3.
In what year did Warhammer 40K first edition
come out? Oh, bollocks. 1982.
Close. 5 years too
early. 87? Okay. All right. I was in the right decade, so that's not bad.
Yeah, you're
I was trying to remember like if I played that at 10 or if I was 15 or when it was, and yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
First ed was 1987. All right, now this is a fun one because, and it may be completely apocryphal, but there are enough like online, like, yeah, this totally happened.
Okay.
Who played D&D with Vin Diesel on the set of The Chronicles of Riddick?
Oh, I love that movie. Actually, I like Pitch Black, not Chronicles of Riddick. Man, I don't even know. I'm trying to remember who was in Chronicles because that was the yellow poster one. I'll say Joe. He had nothing to do with that movie, but I'll say Joe.
Well, it's somewhat on par. It's one of my favorite actors who's always underrated, Carl Urban.
Ah, okay.
Thandie Newton,
the Horsemaster.
The Horsemaster. Thandie Newton, who, if you've seen Westworld,
she is
one of the robots.
Nice.
And Dame Judi Dench.
No way! Are you kidding?
Yeah. Supposedly she was in the game. Oh
man, that would be. I would kill to play with her.
I'd give body parts.
That would be amazing.
They were like, you lose your pinky. I'm like. Here.
I literally, yeah, you want a toe? I'll get you a toe by Thursday.
Yeah, I'll get you a toe. Get your toe by Thursday.
I think if I was DMing a game and she was one of the characters, every time she fumbled, I would just like be, oh, you have a +1 bonus to fumbles, right? And just to make sure that she didn't like completely fumble. Yeah, I love Dame Judi Dench. Oh, that would be amazing. That would be amazing. That would be great. God, that would be awesome. That's such a cool group. I think if I was DMing a game and she was one of the characters, every time she fumbled, I would just like be, oh, you have a +1 bonus to fumbles, right? Just to make sure that she didn't like completely fumble.
I want her to DM.
Yeah. I love Dame Judi Dench.
Like imagine Dame Judi Dench setting a scene.
Oh, that would be amazing. Wouldn't it be amazing?
I wish she did audio. I wish she did. I really enjoy her.
God, that would be awesome. I know, right? That's such a cool group.
Like you have Vin Diesel, who's just this turbo nerd.
Yeah.
You have Carl Urban, who doesn't want to be a star because he likes being in he likes his
he's
rate
the second
being,
man. He's the second
man. He's the second man, but he also loves being in genre movies.
Yep.
And you know, he's the boys, he's McCoy. He's all those things. And then Thandie Newton, who's great.
That's awesome. Like,
That's a fun group. That'd be a lot of fun.
I would have paid to watch that Twitch streamed without a doubt.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But you know what? We should move forward.
Let's slide on in under the bottom rope to the undercard.
The undercard. On today's undercard. Scott asks, filler games, huh? And Pat asks the immortal question of all gamers, to paint or not to paint?
The answer is always to paint.
Yeah. I mean, probably. Yes, probably. I mean, sure. But then there's the immortal meme, joke, New Year's resolution, whatever. I'm not going to buy anything.
Until I'm done painting.
Until I'm done painting all the stuff I have.
Right, yeah.
The sure. giant gray plastic mountain in my other room will has words for you about how much that's a lie.
And you're not going to, you're not going to, that was bad. Never mind. Keep going. Forget it.
I'm not going to, all right, whatever. See, I'm asking this because two of my favorite armies in Warhammer 40K just came out with new books. For 9th edition, whether you like Warhammer 40K or not, whether you like 9th edition or not, it's always cool to get a new book because you get the new like fluff and they bring in some new models and it's really cool. And stuff that maybe wasn't good for a long time is now good again. And you can, a lot of times they'll harken back, they'll change up the way it works and you'll get some cool things. I'm lucky enough that both these are good. The reviews on both these armies are that they are not world beaters or anything, but they're like solid and they do well and play well. And there's a lot of potential in them. And for the Tau, it's even better because there's lots of options. Usually the Tau is an army that was like, well, I have this giant brick wall full of dudes and they are going to shoot you until you die from it. Go. Or they were, hey, I'm going to pick this one rule and this one FAQ and I'm going to abuse it into infinity. And I'm going to win a lot because of this, the way GW decided to rule this rule. And it sucked. The other one is Adeptus Custodes, and they are the guards of the Emperor of Mankind. They are basically the brick wall between Alat and him, and they are meant to be just super badasses to a man and built that's a model that has like 30 people in it. And playing a 2,000 point game, like you have 30 models.
That's a lot.
And you're going to be no, it isn't. Not in 40K.
No,
30 models is.
I don't mean a lot quantity wise. I'm sorry, I said that wrong.
Oh yeah,
I'll get in the groove tonight.
They're all beefy, you know. They're manly men or right. whatever. They're thick, as it were, and they're meant to be hard to kill and stuff. And Tau, on the flip side, are like completely expendable. Well, as I'm doing this, I'm thinking up army ideas in my head, and I'm like, if I played ever, we're not even going to get into that. If I play test, like, I'm going to bring gray plastic to the table. Because, like, Now, if I go to an event, I have to paint.
Okay.
I have to. Because they require it. And I'm going to require it of myself because it's just the way I am. But, like, there are a lot of people who, for a lot of reasons, don't paint their armies. They have giant hunks of gray plastic, mm-hmm. and they don't paint them. There are people who have physical disabilities, can't do
sure,
it.
Sure, sure.
There are people who just, like, don't have the time to do it.
Time. I was going to say, that's the biggest detractor, without a doubt.
And that's why one of our friends, Thomas Reedy, has a side gig forever.
Yep.
Because he's a mutant and can paint really fast.
Really good, really fast.
Yeah, really good, really fast. Like, it's scary watching him paint. He's crazy. If you ever get a chance, go over to Bowles, I think Tuesday nights, he does a paint stream for them.
There you go.
And he paints full models in, like, no time flat. It's nuts.
Nice.
But you want to paint, and the coolest reasons I found to paint, and Scott's right, the answer is to paint. I understand not wanting to paint when you're figuring out, okay, am I going to play it with this config or that config? Or, you know, I'm just getting into this army and I want to play. I want to get my hands dirty and you get a feel for the game and play. But, like, eventually you want to paint. And so you come up with the different paint schemes or whatever. And you paint and you bring your army to the table. And then you find out that you're terrible at painting. You're not good. And you're like, but I don't want to be not good.
But I argue that. And I have seen, especially over the last 2 years of people being in quarantine, I've seen a lot of people get down on themselves about, oh, I'm not as good of a painter as somebody else. And my whole thing when it comes to painting your minis, whether it's for board games or Warhammer or whatever it may be, my whole thing is you don't need to be better than anybody else. you need to be happy with what you did. If you're not happy with what you did on its own, that's fine. But if you're not happy because you're comparing it to somebody else's who may have a different skill set or may have more time or more money for better brushes or better paint or any of that stuff, that's doing yourself an injustice, in my opinion. I know many people that their minis would never be featured on the covers of, you know, Warhammer magazines, but they love their work. And that's the biggest important thing to me is, you know, did you enjoy your time painting? Did you have fun while you're doing it? Are you happy with the results? And would you play with those minis? Then great. Then that's awesome. Right.
I love that that triggered that rant. And I'm really happy that it did, because like, that's not at all where I was going. But, what I was going to say is, you realize that you're terrible. Like what you painted compared to all your friends, it just looks awful. And you're like, oh man, I'm a 5-year-old. Like, look at that guy. That's
anger painted my.
Yeah, no kidding. It has 3 colors on it because I only own 3 colors. Right, I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm a moron. I don't know what I'm doing. And then you learn this whole other side to gaming. You learn that you can actually create art. And straight up create art. If you haven't had the chance, if you're kind of new to all this stuff, and there's a lot of you, go online on Reddit, go on Cool Mini or not, go in a lot of places. People post the work that they've done and the art that they've created with miniatures. And it's shocking.
Yeah.
How beautiful some of this stuff is.
Yeah.
And it creates a sense of like, oh man, I must be terrible because I can't do that. Well, the thing is, those are people like who have painted like as their obsession.
That's their job in some cases.
It's their job in some cases. Yeah. And it's their obsession. It's their discipline, as Nick Offerman puts it. So like what you can do if you're obsessed with like, I don't think I look good. All right. Well, you want to be a better player. You play more, so paint more, and then paint some more. And just like I talked about last week about playing with other people makes you better and it makes you have more fun. Painting is a great way to understand the lore of the hobby, understand the lore of the game that you're working on.
Sure.
But also like get a feel for your miniatures and suddenly you create emotional attachments to them.
You know what I've started doing with mine?
Built them and had a lot of fun with it.
Because I have a lot of board games that have minis and you don't necessarily need to paint them, but it'll always make it look better, right? I've started doing a very simple tactic that I would highly recommend to people. Most midweight casual games have miniatures that if you were to actually paint them like a professional 40K model, you might actually forget which one is yours and which one isn't yours because there are so much to them and everything. And I did this with a game called Sanctum from Czech Games Edition, which if you like Diablo the video game, play Sanctum. It's Diablo the video game as a board game. It's really, really cool. And there's 4 characters in it that are color aligned, you know, Rangers green, fighters red, all that and everything. There is a, and I can't remember the name of it, but there is a white paint from Citadel that is a contrast paint. I want to say that it's like graveyard white or something like that. But when you flat them with a gray primer and then you take this contrast paint and go over the entire miniature with this white paint, it will create this kind of stone look to them. And then I pick one thing. So like with Sanctum, the fighter has this big flowing cape. I made his cape red. The ranger, I made the quiver green. And I did the same thing. But what I did is after I did the whole thing with that contrast white, I did a flat base color of green or red or whatever, yellow or blue the color was on the item I was doing. And then I took the contrast paint of the same color, so a contrast blue or a contrast green, and went over it. It's extremely simple. Took maybe a half hour to paint 4 minis that way. And you don't have to be overly detailed. You just kind of have to stay in the lines of the one object you want to paint the color on.
Yeah, and but I bet it pops like crazy.
It does. It makes itself look so good. In a way, it makes it like a statue-like. And, mm-hmm. and people really, really like that. And you can get creative with it. The other thing I was going to suggest is there's a lot of stores that I have seen, hobby stores. There's one here in Kansas City that does it. I know there's several in Austin that do it. They do pint and paint nights. So if they have beer and bar, they'll let you spend like $10 and you get a beer and a mini and you can paint. And every time I've gone to one of those events, the first time I went to one of those events, I was really kind of anxious and apprehensive because I kind of felt like, oh, there's going to be someone there. It's like, actually, you need to use the number three brush with the, you need to use this amount of water involved with your mixing. Like, I was just paranoid that it was going to be that guy, right?
You punt that guy into the snow.
Right. Yeah, exactly. In the yellow snow.
Yeah.
But thankfully, there's never been anybody like that in like the 6 or 7 times I've done it. And it's become a thing now that my son and I do it when they make the announcement every month. We'll make plans that night to go do it. And we just go and sit down. We've always met somebody. We've always learned something. Every time we've gone, there's somebody doing something that we were like, oh, I never thought about that technique or using that. And like there was a girl last time we went who was painting this kind of like seal miniature. And she painted it the flat gray. She kind of gave it a little bit of a wash. Then she took her napkin and dipped it in like a darker gray, dabbed it out, and started touching him to spot him. And I was like, never would have thought of that. And it looks amazing, right?
I've used sponges before. I've done all kinds of stuff like that. It's really cool.
It's a very therapeutic hobby too.
Oh yeah.
Such a therapeutic hobby.
So back in the day.
That's why Henry Cavill paints.
Yeah. Back in the day, I used to fire up the Tour de France.
Mm.
So I got widescreen. Well,
that would have been the Tour de Lance.
widescreen HD picture. Well, I still watch every year.
Sure, sure.
But I've got widescreen HD, now 4K, of France from a helicopter.
Nice.
For most of the race, right? I have two relatively calm British dudes until it gets to the sprints at the end.
Yeah, the mountains and the sprints. Yep.
Mountains and the sprints. And then I'm just sitting there painting.
Nice.
And it's, oh, that's such a happy place for me.
It is, yeah.
And it's such a wonderful hobby when you decide, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I have set myself challenges to try and do cool stuff and have come up with really neat models. I used to enjoy the conversion aspect of it, where I would take what I was given and go, that's not enough. And sure. I would change it.
Those chaos fuckers need skeletons coming out of their tires.
Sure. Those orcs, that's not enough gun.
No, never enough gun.
On that. Hey, that missile, that looks like a cool missile. I need 4 of them.
I can hang a dwarf off that.
Yeah, it's meant to look like a ICBM. Yeah, I know. I need 4 of them. I need 4 of them to go on a missile rack.
I don't know if you remember my tank. Chaos Army. I had a Chaos Army that I had the bikers, and then I took the skeletons from 40K or from Fantasy, and I put them on the front in a way that it looked like they had run over them and picked them up and everything. And I remember going to events and people were like, that is such a cool idea. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, I don't play Fantasy, but I mean, they got cool models, right?
So, yeah. I used to, I have a Blood Angels army in my death company. Just because of the name, if nothing else, they're all standing on bases covered in skulls. And I just got like packs of skulls and just used a bunch of green stuff to hold them in place, and or not even green stuff. I just used like spackle paint and held them in place. And then the root is, yes, you're going to paint. It doesn't matter whether or not you're some master. What matters is that you find the level that you like doing and do it and enjoy it. You know, I posted that orc army on Bell of Lost Souls. It was a feature article and was told, cool, this is nice. When you finish it, you should show the rest of the army off. It was done.
And you're like, love you too, bro.
Now, what's funny is I've grown as a painter, and I come back and I looked at that army and I'm like, oh, they're so right. They were right on every level. Oh, my God.
But again, you were happy with it. So
I was. Yeah. Because I did cool conversions, and I made a friggin' Stompa that had a wrecking ball arm, and it was really neat. And then I, you know, grew and did my Blood Angels. That was really fun. And then did Death Company, which were, or not Death Company, Death Watch,
nice.
Which are essentially the men on the wall.
Nice.
From Game of Thrones, except Space Marines.
Yep.
And did them with like a lot of highlighting. I did Imperial Knights.
Okay.
So they're like, you know, 10 inches tall, Nice. And I have seven of them, and they're Longhorn themed.
Boy,
they look like they're from the University of Texas.
Roy Canaday, really cool. Who is a good buddy of mine, game designer extraordinaire and reviewer at the Dice Tower, is in the middle of printing the Galactus for the Dice Tower that is part of the Cool Mini or Not Marvel Zombies offer, which is like, it's like 2.5 feet tall. It's not a mini at all. Like, I don't even know how they can call it a mini. It's like a statue. It's just crazy how big it is. Yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff. But no, I would definitely say, enjoy what you enjoy, love what you love, and paint what you want to paint.
Yep. And I guarantee you, if you're like, how did that guy accomplish that? There's a guide.
Oh yeah. There's a video. YouTube video. I've learned a ton of techniques from YouTube.
I everything I know is from YouTube and from a couple friends of mine.
Although there is one secret that I think I've learned. If you were born and raised in Brazil, you're a good artist. I don't know what the deal is, but every time I see somebody lately that is just unbelievable miniature, they live in Brazil. And I'm like, is there something in the water? Like, it's amazing, right?
I have a lot of jokes I could make, and I'm just going to move on.
There you go. Well, let's move on. Let's talk about filler games.
Yeah.
So my thing I want to talk about is kind of similar to what you were talking about. You know, you're talking about therapeutic session of mini painting and stuff like that. I recently got a game from Kickstarter. From Ape Games, APE Games. It's called One Card Wonder. And I am a sucker for Civilization stuff. I love Sid Meier Civ. I love like historical games, anything like that I'm a sucker for. Especially anything that's a city building or building mechanic. And One Card Wonder really kind of struck me as a game that I would love. It's a game that you get one card, hence the name. It is a wonder, like the pyramids of Giza, the hanging gardens of, you know, whatever. So you get Babylon or whatever. You get all these great lighthouse, different things like that. The card itself has a picture of the wonder. It has stages of the wonder to be built, resources that the wonder takes for each stage to be built. And then the game is very simple. You have four actions. You are gaining resources. You're putting resources on a market. You're getting resources from that market instead of from a bag if you want to choose it that way. You're selling resources, you're trading resources, things like that. Very, very simple game. And it is a very easy game to teach. And I realized within three turns, it's a hard game to master. And I loved it. We played it and it took maybe 15 minutes to play a two-player game, like super quick. And I immediately was like, oh, this is going to be a great filler game. But then I realized it also has really good decisions and really good things to make you think. So when I say the term filler game, most people usually use the term filler saying, you're crazy. most people usually use the term filler to talk about a game that they're playing in between other games. So much like the Oreo cream is the filling for a sweet, sweet Oreo. You have a game that you play for like an hour, hour and a half. Then you play a filler game for 15, 20 minutes. Then you play another game for an hour, hour and a half. One of the most famous filler games has got to be Love Letter. It's a very, very popular. It's been rethemed to a bajillion themes. Really, really fun deduction game. It's an 18-card deduction game. But they're games that are designed to be approachable. They're, you know, very open. They're really easy to teach, very quick to play. You don't have to sit there and think on your turn for 20 minutes because the whole game takes only 20 minutes. And I wanted to kind of bring up a couple that I have found to be super, super fun things that I think people should look at when they're looking for a game to be that kind of filler game. So obviously One Card Wonder is one. I think it's a great, great, great game. Another game that is super fun and is probably always going to be on my shelf is a game called King Domino. If you have ever played dominoes, you will know how to play King Domino, but it is a beautiful, cute little version of how to play it. You're building your kingdom around your castle and you have to match up different types of land, like, you know, the ocean or the plains or the forest or the caves, and you get different points based on how you're putting them together, very much like dominoes would work. So really, really cool, cute little game. Another game that just recently came out, well, I mentioned Love Letter, but another game that recently came out has two different versions. One is called The Crew, and the other is called The Crew Mission Deep Sea. Mission Deep Sea was a sequel and something that came out after it. The Crew is a trick-taking game. but you're not allowed to communicate with each other because it's a cooperative trick-taking game where you're either in space or underwater. You're only able to communicate so much, but the goal of the group is to win the trick. It's not a trick-taking game where like you're trying to stick someone with the tricks or take all the tricks or anything like that. You're actually, as a group, cohesively trying to work together. And it's a game that when you play a card, you're not only helping the group, but you're trying to signal to other players, I'm playing this for a specific reason at a specific time. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And it's just a great, phenomenal, really, really, really cool little game. I know that a lot of people like The Mind. I have argued that The Mind is more of an activity than a game, because The Mind is basically a deck of, I think, 99 cards. And you and the group all get shuffled out the entire deck, and you have to play the cards in ascending order. And it's not a question of like, oh, I have the two, I'll play the two. It's I play a card and I play the number one. And then if the next person goes and they don't have the number two, they have to play whatever they think is going to be the lowest card. It's going to help the team get to where they need to get to. So it's a little bit more of an activity, but a lot of people really, really, really do like the game. And I can totally understand why they like the game. Another great one that I really like and my wife really hates is a game called Coup. C-O-U-P. If you play Coup, I'm the Duke. Don't question me. It's just the way it is. It's a game very similar to Love Letter and Hidden Deduction and Hidden Roles, but it plays very, very differently. Coup is a game that I know people who have played it every Friday for years, probably decades at this point. And it can start fistfights, but it can also mean make like hugs and happy times around the table as well. So it is one of the better kind of, you know, we're gonna draw out some emotions when it comes to gaming kind of thing. My final game is one that I always think is hilarious and over the top and has a special place in my heart. It's a game called Guillotine. And I kid you not, the whole purpose of the game is there is a line of nobles that are about to be beheaded, and you have to get the most points by beheading the right people at the right time. Sounds really morbid, but it is so tongue-in-cheek and so silly and ridiculous. It's like, it's done by Wizards of the Coast that makes Magic the Gathering. They actually print the game. It's over the top. It's like way over the top, like absurdly over the top. Done by a very, very good friend of mine, someone I absolutely adore and love in this world, Paul Peterson. He was a designer, and it is a game that is very cartoony. It's very tongue-in-cheek. It's a game that you'll laugh at. We have played it with kids as young as 11, and they have just laughed their heads off at, oh, no, you're going to behead the judge, you know, and stuff like that. And it's cool because you have to choose someone to put at the front of the line, and then you get to use an ability which may then shake up the line. So, and you're getting different points based on the people that you end up beheading. So it's a very, very cool, and again, very portable game. That's another important thing about filler games. Very portable, very quick. But I could talk all day long about filler games, so we should probably jump into the mid card at this point.
The mid card. Mid.
Let's all go to the mid card. Let's all go to the mid card.
Mid card. Not mid-card. Let's all
go to the mid-card and get ourselves some snacks.
On today's...
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that little ditty in between? Like,
let's go out to the lobby. Let's go out to the lobby. Let's go out to the lobby.
I was going to say it was a song like Jack and Diane, but then I realized it's just a little ditty.
Yeah. It's from the movie theaters and popularized by a bunch of pop culture. Anyway. On today's mid-card. Pat talks about that weird moment when you tell normal people, you know, normies, that you're into professional wrestling. And Scott talks about legends that just aren't that legendary.
It's not that they aren't legendary. It's that they're not considered legendary, I guess, is probably the right way to say.
See, I thought you were taking a dump on them, but...
No, not at all.
Barry Horowitz is... not bad, you know.
So let's talk about this, right? So this will probably lead into your thing, and this is my wrestling nerd seriously coming out.
Yeah.
So there's an old debate about who the best person was to never win the world title, right? Things like Jake Roberts and Roddy Piper and Ricky Steamboat and things like that. Even though Ricky Steamboat was WCW world champion or NWA world champion, but that's a longer story for a taller beer. Today I want to talk about kind of the unsung heroes, the people who I think are legendary but aren't referred to as legendary. And the first one I'm going to start with, since you mentioned his name, is Barry Horowitz. Barry Horowitz was a jobber. I mean, a jobber.
Jobbity, job, lost, job, 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 job.
Guy lost all the time. He made the Cleveland Indians of the 80s look like freaking world champions. The guy was just, he was bad. He was the Generals. He was the Washington Generals to everyone else's WWE Globetrotters. Anybody who wrestled in the 80s, they beat Barry Horowitz at some point or another. But the thing is, and this is what got me thinking about this, was Sean Spears. I really like Sean Spears, but I think Cody's comment of he's a good hand, he's a good guy to have around, the exact same thing as Barry Horowitz. Barry never, Horowitz was a guy never who was mind very the 10 talented.
Seconds.
Right, right. So Barry Horowitz was a guy who helped other people, trained other people, made other people get better, and did it all very selflessly along the way of never really asking for much himself. And he's a guy that when I think back to my childhood at, 10, 11 years old of watching wrestling, he's a guy that always kind of pops into my head of, I always remember Barry Horowitz, because that was a time when, and I said this before about the Generals and the Globetrotters, growing up in New York, if you didn't go to see Madison or didn't go to see the Globetrotters at Madison Square Garden, you were probably an abused child. But it was a lot of like an annual thing. They would come every February and it was so much fun. And the Generals sucked. They always got their ass kicked. They always lost. It was always a joke. And Barry Horowitz was kind of the same way. He always lost, never got in offense. Occasionally had a 5-minute match, but he was the guy that was done in 3 minutes and that was it. But he's a guy that, in my opinion, helped push wrestling forward in a way that most people don't think about, right? The next guy is someone that would probably be divisive for some people. It's Ron Killings, R-Truth. R-Truth, most people forget this. R-Truth in, I want to say 2007, I think. Ron Killings, R-Truth, was the first African-American black NWA heavyweight champion. And when you think about the history of the NWA belt, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, how did Ron Simmons not win that before him?
Yeah, Ron Simmons was WCW world champion, yeah, but not NWA world champion. Right. And I remember seeing Ron Killings before he was R-Truth. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at that guy going, oh my God, this guy, he is the package. Like, this guy is the future. He's got the build. He's got the ability to talk. He's got the charisma, the stamina, like everything you could want. Now, most people are probably sitting there going, yeah, but R-Truth's a joke. Like, he's just a comedy bit. That's all he's doing is comedy now. And that's true. He is only doing comedy. The man's also almost 50. And he's in better shape than most people I know at 30, let alone 20. But the guy is so good, like so good in the ring. When it comes to actually getting in that ring and wrestling, selling, putting on a match, making it look good. I mean, Ron Killings is ace in my opinion. He is a guy that I would put up there at the top of the list of guys I would want to wrestle if I was a professional wrestler, because he's awesome.
Also, fun fact, he is Vince McMahon considers him the funniest man alive.
Yeah, he loves him. He thinks he's hilarious. So the last two are women, and they're a tag team. And you might immediately think it's somebody like Becky and Sasha or something like that. It's not. We're going way back to like mid-80s on this one. Norio Tateno and Itsuki Yamazaki were known as the Jumping Bomb Angels. They were, if you watched the wrestling, World Wrestling Federation, they were originally women's tag team champions. They beat the Glamour Girls, Leilani Kai and Judy Martin, in a 2 out of 3 fall championship to win those. And let me tell you, most people look at the women's tag belts now and they think that's what they were. Mm-hmm. No, there was a women's tag team title way long ago in the mid-80s, early mid-80s, 86, 87 kind of time frame. The Jumping Bomb Angels were, unfortunately, horrendously stereotyped when they came to the World Wrestling Federation, like most everyone else in the mid-80s, right? We're talking about the people that made Kamala. I'll just leave mm-hmm. it at that. But the Jumping Bomb Angels, it's an absolute travesty, in my opinion, that more people do not mention these two women's name when they talk about the women's revolution. Because if you go back to that late mid-80s, it's the Moolah era. Mm-hmm. It's the era of her holding people down.
Yep.
If anyone doesn't know, Moolah's a terrible person.
Go watch that Dark Side of the Ring.
Dark Side of the Ring will make you cry at certain points. Yeah. It's so bad. But I remember being a kid watching her, Moolah, dressed as the Spider Lady, defeat yep. Wendi Richter in Madison Square Garden in a move. And this is so funny to me. This still makes me laugh. Everyone thinks that the 1997 screw job at the Montreal Survivor Series was like the point of wrestling is real. What's going on? The only reason that was the point of wrestling is real and what's going on and what's happening here and exposing the business was because the internet was exploding. Literally 12 years prior to 1997, in 1985, Wendi Richter was the WWF Women's Champion. She walked mm-hmm. into Madison Square Garden, not having a contract, arguing with Vince McMahon about maybe or maybe not resigning, and Moolah did a hip toss. I mean, you want to talk about like, I'm going to beat you with a headlock takeover.
Mm-hmm.
Hip tossed her, threw her on the ground, pushed her shoulders down, and the referee slapped 3 faster than I could slap 1.5.
Yep.
Rang the bell. No one knew what was going on. Even Gorilla Monsoon and Lord Alfred Hayes, God rest their souls, who were the announcers, didn't know what was going on. And they were like, this is so bizarre that she just went. I don't know what happened. What just happened? Oh, we have a new champion, right? And it was like, it was such mm-hmm. a bizarre incident. And Moolah held everybody down. But at a time when the whole federation, from a female's perspective, revolved around Moolah, Norio and Itsuki were doing things that were unbelievable. If you like Asuka, if you like Kairi Sane, you have the Jumping Bomb Angels to thank for it. Because these women were technical wrestlers, high-flying wrestlers. They only wrestled in like 2 different federations, if I remember right. They wrestled in All Japan and they wrestled in World Wrestling Federation. I think maybe they did some stints on the independent circuit at the time, but these were women who were genre breaking and genre defining, in my opinion. They were the ones that went out and said, yeah, we're saddled with a shitty racist gimmick. Yeah, we're colorful and they made us look flashy when really we're just technical wrestlers.
Yeah.
But they went out and they put on a show. And I remember as a young boy watching them, I thought they were the coolest thing because they weren't the stereotypical prototype of what Vince McMahon wanted to put in front of you. They were different. They were exciting. They wrestled different. They were awesome. So I think it's a travesty when people talk about the women's revolution, they don't talk about those two women. And I wish more people did. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. How weird are you when you tell people things like that?
Well, you know, like any nerd culture or dork culture or whatever, there's this weird moment where you're like, okay, we've gone too far. You know,
maybe like I just did.
Yeah, kinda. I mean, you know, there's lots of moments that everybody has, but like, I didn't even think twice about it when my boss asked me, hey, give us some notes about, you know, who you are in this introductory email. Like, he's from Round Rock, Texas, and, you know, plays with his dogs and he's married and, you know, goes to Texas games or whatever. And I was like, at the end, I was like, and watches way too much professional wrestling. I didn't even think about it. I didn't. And I haven't had people at work say anything about it. Now, it's, to be fair, I'm working remote. And so this really isn't about that culture. This is about like that moment when you realize that, like, it's those memes where like you have a thing you think is really amazing, and actually the person you tell it to goes, neat, and moves on. You know,
that's nice for you.
It's nice for you. Like, you know, I'm a fan of a bunch of corner case stuff. Like I said in the intro, I'm a fish fan. I get it. There's not a lot of them. It was one of the reasons I knew I was going to marry my wife, when I was like, this is fish. I hope it's okay for you. And then she was like, this is great. And I was like,
yay. Hearts in the eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like, just so happy. Just happy as I could be. And, yeah, it's like, okay, well, let's see what you say about professional wrestling. And she's like, I used to watch professional wrestling. Shawn Michaels was hot. And I'm like, yeah, all right. Whatever gets you in the door. That's fine. That's totally fine. Like, she loves watching Jungle Boy because, you know,
sure,
Jack Perry's hot. Beautiful. He's a pretty man, you know, and
I'm pretty confident that if he shaved that beautiful head of hair, he'd look exactly like his dad.
Yes. He'd need to have some sideburns. But other than that, yeah, he'd look exactly like his father. Which is weird that he can't cut as good a promo as he can cut, because
he's getting much better.
Oh, yeah.
Much
he's better. Leaps and bounds. Like, pairing him with Christian. Oh,
yeah.
Mwah, one of the best things.
Hey, I got one thing to say. Mm-hmm. That watch is fake. We're going to kick your ass.
Yeah, no, that was so great. As he has evolved into Jungle Man, he has become quite good. But
very much.
But like that moment when you realize you're talking to somebody who's not into it, and they're looking at you like wrestling's fake or whatever, and you know, they're like, well, do you like MMA? I'm like, yeah, MMA's great. Like, watching people punch each other is really fun, but I can't get into it. And I realized part of what it is. I can't get into it if there's no story. I need somebody to hype the fight. I don't care if two guys are just, okay, this guy's good and that guy's good and they're going to hit each other. Okay.
The defense submits Bryan Danielson and any match he had in AEW this year.
I will back up and say that the technicality in the, and again, I'm a guy who could enjoy this. When it is superb in the ring, I don't care. Like, I'm gonna watch it, I'm gonna enjoy it.
There needed to be no story whatsoever when him and Minoru Suzuki went at it.
Not at all. None. The story was Minoru Suzuki was finally getting to wrestle Bryan Danielson. That's all you needed.
They could have tried to make some lame, he dinged my car in a parking lot crap, but it's like, that match needed nothing.
I still love the moment when he fixes Bryce's uniform.
Yes.
God, that makes
my favorite moment in that whole match is still the thunderous elbow, Danielson falling down, and Richard's face covering his mouth like, oh my God, you just killed him. Yeah. Right? Like,
that was phenomenal. Oh, so great. That was, all jokes aside, that was the first picture on the front of Medium, rapscuttle.medium.com.
Nice. There you go.
A blog that I'm terrible at updating. Anyway,
it's okay.
But you sit there and you realize it's like, oh yeah, they're like, well, fake stuff. And I'm like, okay, let's back up.
Don't use the F word.
Don't say that word. It's predetermined. It's scripted. But when Mick Foley fell off that cage, he fell off that cage. And unfortunately for Mick, that was not a rigged table down there at the bottom like they do today, where Shane falls through something and it looks like a table, but it's not. You know,
the killer wasn't the fall onto the table from the top of the cage. The killer was falling through the cage into the ring that nobody expected.
Right. The one that wasn't supposed to happen. And not only that, onto thumbtacks. Yeah. Because, you know, that needed more. I don't know. The apex of gaming and wrestling, though, is the Brandon Cutler match where he
D20 match.
Where he threw out the
D4s.
The D4s, the bag of dice. And then dropped.
I think I would rather get thrown. Pretty Peter Avalon.
Pretty Peter
Avalon.
That's right. I would
rather get thrown on thumbtacks. I think I'd rather get thrown on thumbtacks on a burning table than thrown on dice. I think dice would hurt more.
Legos.
Yeah. Legos are terrible.
Like a bag of Legos. That'd be awful.
Yeah.
But see, here we are. We're sitting here nerding out about this stuff, and I realize the way that I tell people about it. And I get them to, I cut off that look of what are you talking about? Yeah. Because I try and find like what they like first, you know, like what is your thing that you really enjoy? And like, oh, you're a sports guy. You're like into this, you're into that. cool. Like, I enjoy that as well. I'm into this, but I also enjoy professional wrestling. And I enjoy it because of the athleticism, the storytelling, and the drama of it that I know I'm going to get for sure. Right. This year in the NFL playoffs has been phenomenal from a drama perspective.
You could not write stories better.
Couldn't
apart from the Bills winning, but that's another story.
Like Joe Burrow basically just being like, no, 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 I am that good. There's a reason LSU disappeared after I left.
Yeah.
Like, I am that good. Like, the redemption of Matt Stafford, the, you know, the, like, the fact that, that Pat Mahomes is an old man now. Like, all these things. The last ride of Tom Brady. Pick him.
And the funniest thing I saw this weekend was Matthew Stafford is playing in the Super Bowl. Eminem is at the halftime show. This is the closest Detroit has ever been to the Super Bowl. And I love you, Detroit fans. I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, so the pain is real. So,
Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers.
No,
I'm going to cry into my beer.
During one of the matches, I think it was actually the Bengals and the Bengals
one
and
of the matches
the Chiefs. Yeah, it matches. There you go. That's where my head is. One of the games, the Bengals and the Chiefs game. One of the guys was talking about how the biggest comeback in the AFC Championship game. I'm like, no, you guys are wrong. You're totally wrong. And then my wife went, that was a divisional game. And I'm like, oh, shit, she's right. I was like, because that was one of the biggest like comebacks in
that was
like,
a wild sports. Card game.
It was a wild card game or a divisional game?
Yeah, it was a wild card game. It was first round.
The thing that I remember about that game
kicked
was
me
I was working
so hard in the chest.
I was working.
What
at
we're
Toys
talking
R Us
about, ladies and gentlemen, by the way, is the biggest comeback in basically all of football when the Buffalo Bills crushed everyone in Houston's happiness by coming back and scoring 35 points in the second half to win.
Most people thought that that game was a situation of the Bills coming back from 38-0 when the reality was at halftime it was 35-3.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was a tear from there.
Yep.
They
ran the opening kickoff back and it was over.
I was working as a stockroom manager at Toys R Us. My boss was a huge Houston Oilers fan. And all I remember was coming into the break room and I'm like, hey, what's the score? Does anyone know what the score is? What's the score? And he just looked at me and he went, 35-3. And I went, dear God, tell me it's the Bills. He's like, no, it's not the Bills. And I'm like, oh my God. So I was going on lunch and we went to a pizza place right next door to where we were working. And we sat down right as the kickoff was being returned. And I'm like, oh, this is amazing, right? And we sat there for the entire rest of the game together watching that game. He was yelling at the top of his lungs. I was screaming at the top of mine with joy. And it was just, that was my Super Bowl. That was my Super Bowl. So.
Meanwhile, in Houston, I turned it off after they ran the kickoff back because I knew it was going to happen because I was a fatalist Houston fan. And my girlfriend dumped me that day.
Oh, so, that's terrible. Yeah,
it was a really bad day. We've talked about it before on this podcast, I think. And it will never not be soul crushing. But anyway, the thing is about this year's playoffs, about the greatest loss in history or whatever, about when my Houston Astros won the World Series. The thing is, those dramas were there because it was real and it was possible, but there's just as many years where they're awful, or who cares? There's no reason to get invested. Nobody cares about who's playing. It's a bunch of millionaires who don't care. If you're not from that city, whatever. You know, like, at least my Astros became the greatest villain in all of baseball.
Which is saying something given the Yankees.
Given the Yankees, yeah. Because then, and they played in two World Series since then and got the entire country to root against them.
Yep.
And made whoever they were playing
against the world.
Yeah. And us in Houston were like, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, that's what makes those so special. Professional wrestling has that cooked in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you're going to get your drama.
It's at its DNA.
And when it's good, it's just as good. When you're invested emotionally, like we've always said from episode one of this podcast, when you're invested emotionally in what you're watching, it's so much better. When Wardlaw finally turns around and is like, nah, I'm done. Yep. I'm done, Max. It's going to be amazing. I will come out of my chair. I will be happy for that dude. It will be so good. You
get out of my chair on that space. I was like, whoa, where is this going?
Just cheer. Like, you know, I'm an unabashed Hangman Page fan. I'm going to love, I loved every bit of the go into the lead into that championship against Omega and then the two matches against Danielson. But I was on the edge of my seat for both of them or all three of them because I was like, is he going to win? Are they going to let him win? Like, because he's not the bigger star. And are they really invested in building something? And it turns out that Tony Khan was. And I was rewarded as a fan for having stuck around and wanting it. The thing is, you're a Buffalo Bills fan. I'm a Houston fan. I don't have a championship that isn't tainted.
Ever. And I don't have a championship.
And you don't have a championship. Like, you've lost them. I almost would rather have lost them than to hear people tell me, well, the Rockets won the NBA championship. And that's only because Jordan retired.
Oh yeah,
went to play baseball, yep. Baseball for 2 years. You know the Astros won, but did they?
Dude, how do you think? Yeah, how do you think Tampa Bay fans feel right?
Oh now? Yeah,
I mean they got their one. I said this last year when they won it. He should have retired last year. He should have gone out on top. He got greedy. He wanted one more, and that's fine. Whatever.
But... we wanted to prove it, and to be fair, like he almost did. But this year was like this crazy. The playoffs this year have been insane. They've been absolutely insane.
Well, the divisional round and the championship round has been insane. The wild card weekend was terrible.
Yeah.
I think they need to get rid of the super wild card thing, get rid of the 7 seed, stick to 6 seeds, and that's it. The whole 7 seeds thing is not – the number 7 teams were brutalized so badly. It's like apart from the Raiders, but even the Raiders, it was not a very fun game to watch. So.
But, you know, this isn't a sports ball podcast. We're talking about, you know, real sports, professional wrestling. And what I'm saying is the drama's cooked in, baby. The stories are part of it. The reason those fights in the 60s with Muhammad Ali and whoever else was is because Ali was great.
Yeah.
Ali was amazing.
Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier.
Also, having just like in professional wrestling, having a guy like Cosell on the call.
Jim Ross makes things so much better.
Like there was did you catch the Dippin' Dots reference?
I did. That was so great. I love the Dippin' Dots original comment.
It's so good. But you know what, my friend?
Yeah, I have to usually tell people when I tell people I'm a fan of wrestling and they look at me like I'm sideways, like what? Yeah. And like my response is always, I love wrestling for what it is. But more than loving wrestling for what it is, I love the concept and the business of wrestling. Because somebody sat in a room, probably Vince McMahon Sr., sat in a room and said, all right, everybody, stick with me on this. We're going to sell a product that is completely not real. It's predetermined. It's pre-scripted. We're going to know the outcome before we go into this. And everybody in the arena is going to know it too. And they're still going to buy into it. And they're still going to participate. They're still going to be part of the show. And to me, that's the beauty because you can be a fan of like whatever CSI Dripping Springs or whatever the next CSI show is. And you could be a fan of, you know, Law and Order, SVU, whatever, all that stuff. And there's great drama. And there's great, awesome stories in that and everything. You don't impact that show.
Yeah.
Your ratings do, whether you watch or don't watch, they do. But you can't change that show live, like in the middle of it. And I have seen and been at, I mean, it happened in Austin.
Yeah.
At WWF Raw, when the Godfather came out with dancers from a local bar. And the fans started chanting Ho Train And suddenly that's this biggest thing that got this guy over. Right? Yeah. He's tried like three other gimmicks, couldn't get over. And the fans like made this thing. Now, I know that's terrible and sexist. And mind you, like we've said before, it was the Attitude Era in the 90s when everything was terrible. But it is what it is. So that's, yeah, that's a longer story for a taller beer. But you as fans in wrestling can totally influence, mm-hmm, and change what is going to happen.
They dropped Chris Jericho's music out. They dropped the last chorus of Jericho's music out because around the time you and I went and saw, you know, Dynamite Live, the crowd was just chanting to Judas, and it became something, yep, that they did
intentionally. I become.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, one of the more famous stories is, you know, Vince McMahon is supposedly he's in a hospital bed. He's laid up because Stone Cold, blah, 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 blah. And Mick Foley goes to cheer him up, and he's cheering, yep, him up. And one of the gags he pulls is he takes a sock and he puts a face on it, and he's like, "Mr. Sockles, here to help you." Ha ha ha.
Yep.
And the next time he gets to TV, they're like, "Mick, do you have another one of those socks?" He's like, "Yeah. Why?" There are people lined up outside, and they have socks on. There are, yeah, signs for Mr. Socko. It's, yep, it's huge. And it, yep, was totally like that thing came about because of that. The Rock.
The Rock and Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
That's where I was going to go. The Rock and Hulk Hogan was supposed to be a bleh, right? Like a blip.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a big match, but it wasn't the main event.
Right. And it destroyed the main event by the fans in Toronto deciding, no, this is the most important match that's ever happened.
Yep, I don't care if there's no title on the line. I don't care if this is not a retirement match. I don't care what it is. This is my childhood meeting, mm-hmm, my current life. I'm in.
Yeah,
I'm in.
And by the way, my childhood wins. And to The Rock's credit, he started wrestling heel.
Yep.
And carried, yep, Hogan. He basically got it across to Hogan. He's like, nah, Hulk up.
Yeah.
Like, don't play Hollywood anymore. And they figured that out in the ring.
Like, it's pretty amazing when you think about it.
Oh yeah, and one of the coolest things about it, and it's like going to a play. It's like being part of that. It's a live event that changes things, and the fans are part of it. The fans are integral to it. Sometimes it ain't a good thing. The beach balls and all that stuff. When they're more interested,
right,
the fans are more interested in getting over than what's going on in the ring. But like. Right. The number of times when somebody says something and there's that pause and then, yep, you can hear the crowd start to chant, you know, yep, like that stuff's great. And occasionally that stuff stays and occasionally it goes away. And occasionally you end up with a catchphrase that you didn't intend to have because of the fans. And wrestling, yep, is great in that way. And in it's a communal experience like we talked about last week. You know what? Like a catchphrase that I think he knew when he first said it, because he was just doing his bit. But my friend, there's been enough talking.
It's time for the main event. I love it. That's a great example.
You know, yeah, we're going to go to our main event now, but like, that's a great example. The crowd dictated how awesome that was, and now it's awesome, and it became more awesome. Orange Cassidy became, they told AEW, no, this guy's great.
Yep.
We want to see him more. And then you have guys like Sting giving him the rub where, God, the interaction in that, there was a random match on Dynamite, and Sting and Orange Cassidy interact on the side. On the ground,
yeah,
and Sting does
when
the
he
gorilla.
Beat his chest, like, yeah, yeah.
Just the best stuff, just the best thing
phenomenal.
Ever. It's
phenomenal,
it's phenomenal. But yeah, now in the main event, because I've been talking for the last few minutes, I'm gonna say, Scott, talk to me.
Have we done too much talking?
We have done too much talking.
It is now it's time
for the main
event. For the main event. So tonight on the main event, Pat is going to talk about conquering anxiety with horror.
Yeah.
So curious about that. And I'm going to talk about addictions are dangerous. So I think we should finish with yours, because this is an interesting topic. Mine's actually pretty simple. So much like I told everybody about games earlier that you want to check out from a filler game perspective. Late last year, Asmodee North America bought a company called Board Game Arena. And I know there's a lot of people that have used Board Game Arena for a very long time. I have not used Board Game Arena for a very long time. I've used it for a very short time. I have just recently discovered the joy, the absolute joy of what Board Game Arena is. And Board Game Arena is an online web browser-based tool that allows you to play board games. Not every board game, but a lot of board games. And a lot of really, really good board games, actually. Azul is on there. Jaipur is on there, one of my favorite two-player games of all time. There's a lot of really heavy games, Castles of Burgundy, kind of Euro games. And it is browser-based, so it does have some limitations. You're not playing a PC game, but it works. It works really well. One of my favorite filler games, which we didn't talk about before because I knew we were going to talk about in this segment, is a game called Lucky Numbers. It is a phenomenal little tile placement number counting game, and it's phenomenal. And you can play it really quickly in person, but playing it through Board Game Arena, you can just play hundreds of games. It's just crazy. A brand new game called Seven Wonders Architects has come out recently. And if you're a fan of Seven Wonders, it's a phenomenal game. If you are not a fan of Seven Wonders and don't know what I'm talking about, Seven Wonders is kind of like the OG board game drafting game. It is a game where you have a wonder, very similar to like what we talked about earlier, one card wonder, but it's a wonder that is the Pyramid of Giza or the Great Lighthouse or the Colossus at Rhodes. And you have sections of it to build, just like one card wonder. But in order to build it, you draft cards from a deck of cards that is your hand. You have seven cards in your hand. You draft one, you pass. The stuff get passed to you. You draft one, pass again. And it's a signal sending game. When you're drafting things, people know what you're not necessarily know what you're drafting immediately, because you're going to play your card anyway, and they're going to know what it is, but they know kind of signaling wise what you're doing and where you're going. Seven Wonders Architect follows up a game called Seven Wonders Duel, and this is an interesting pathway. So Seven Wonders could be played with seven people. The problem that I always had with playing Seven Wonders with seven people is that you're generally only interacting with the people on your left and your right, and the person across the table from you doesn't really matter. So when you're playing seven players, it can kind of get long in the tooth. It can kind of get like, yeah, okay, I got to wait 10 minutes for it to get back around to me, right? You know? But then Seven Wonders Duel came out, and it was designed to give you that Seven Wonders drafting perspective and scratch that itch, but do it in a two-player version. Phenomenal game. Oh my goodness, I love Seven Wonders Duel. I've played a lot of Seven Wonders Duel, and it's great. It's a great, great game. Now Seven Wonders Architects has come out, and it kind of is the bridge between the two. It is a game that has the drafting, has the left and right thing, has the wonders, and does it so good and so quick and so fast. It's a $50 board game, which is middle of the road in terms of costs. The physical game comes with some really, really good things to help with setup and teardown of the game in terms of like an insert for each player and everything. But the digital version on BGA, Board Game Arena, is unbelievable. I played a version of it on my phone's browser Saturday morning, seven-player game. Loved it. Had cool. No problems with it whatsoever through my phone browser. And my comment for tonight was that addictions are dangerous. Because 2 weeks ago, I didn't know the inner workings of Board Game Arena. I'm not going to say how many, but I've gotten a lot of achievements in the last 2 weeks. We'll leave it at that. It's a thing where suddenly it's like, bing, you got this, and bing, you got that. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. And the dopamine rush goes, and I'm like, I got to play more. I want to play more. And the fact that they've made, there's a lot of games, and this is what I really, really like about Board Game Arena. There are a lot of games that when you play them in real life are fiddly. And it's a lot of math on the fly, taking time to move things around. Maybe you screwed up. Maybe you didn't screw up. And then you realize two turns later, all you did screw up and you got to go back and fix things. The interface of Board Game Arena does a really good job of handling all that fiddliness for you, which makes the games that you normally would have to, you know, maybe you have a game that you only play 20, 30 minutes at a pace and you see it on Board Game Arena. it doesn't click with you until you play it, and you're suddenly like, whoa, I just played this 5 times in an hour.
Yeah.
Because there's no setup. Yeah. I don't have to do anything to set the game up. I literally hit a button and it's set up. And it's really, really, really cool. I have been extremely impressed with the platform over the last 2 weeks. I know this is an old story for some people because there's a lot of hardcore board gamers who have been on Board Game Arena for a while. But having recently kind of been shown the light, so to speak, absolutely love it. And the really nice thing, the super, super, super nice thing about it, 100% free. If you want to play for free, you can play for free. There are games that you have to have a membership for to be able to play. But the really even cooler thing is you don't have to have a membership to play them. You have to know someone that has a membership to play them. So if I have a membership, which is literally only like $30 for a year, and I want to start a 4-player game of Azul, the other 3 players do not have to have the VIP membership. I can have it and everyone else can share it with me, which is really, really cool. Because then, to me, that's also a good business decision, because the people who have that membership play games with the people that don't. The people that don't are like, oh, I want to play that game more, and they get a membership. So smart idea. But I think plus, like, overall,
in the real world, you know, the person's going to have, like, only one person needs a copy of the game.
Yes, I've argued that many times, but there are games that people will want. Like, you know, if a game is $70, like a Twilight Imperium is a great example. If I'm going to play Twilight Imperium with my group, one person needs to own it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
We don't need 6 people to own Twilight Imperium. Maybe we do if everyone wants to paint their own thing the whole way, but that's crazy in another level. But a game like Codenames is a great example. A game like Suro is a great example. Those are games that are low enough price points and really, really addictively good that when you play them at a friend's house, you don't mind spending $20 or $30 for you to own a copy at your house so you can play whenever you want.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
Yeah.
I love
Suro. I would recommend go check out BGA. Suro is on Board Game Arena if you want to check it out, which is really cool. And I did dive in with the membership. I think it was awesome for $30. Great, great thing. So be careful. It's addictive. It's very, very 3:30 a.m. Oh, shit, I'm still playing this addictive, but it's really good. So,
right on.
And it does give me a little anxiety. So how could I really want to know where this is going. How do I conquer anxiety with horror?
So,
such a weird topic.
I know, right? But I'm all about the weird topics. Or at least the weird, like, here's the lead in. And Scott's like, what is this? And I tell him, he's like, oh, it's not as cool. But anyway, what I'm talking about in this podcast is watching the journey that my wife took playing Dead by Daylight, okay. A video game. If you're not familiar with Dead by Daylight, there are 4 players who are the survivors, and they have to do some tasks to turn on some generators. And then they have to find a hatch to get out of this place that they're in. And the reason they have to get out is there's a 5th player who's a killer, who is coming for them and will kill them, usually by hanging them on a hook until they're dead from it. And it's grisly and jump scary and, you know, horror, right? My wife didn't want to play it initially because, you know, she's not a big fan of horror games. And her friend told her, don't play this. It's going to take all your anxiety. It's going to throw it through the roof. And then recently, like, a streamer that she watched, who she became friends with, was like, hey, I do this game. And I was like, all right, fine. I'll watch it. Fine. She ends up watching it. She ends up enjoying watching it. And she downloads and starts playing it. And it turns out she really likes it. And the reason she really likes it is because it gives her a chance to survive. It gives her a chance, and the exhilaration of being able to get out and outsmart the villain, the killer, and get out and is awesome. And then even more so, the ability to save other people and get them out. You know, and everybody in their lives has had some kind of trauma that they couldn't get away from, right? And watching her be like, yeah, this is therapeutic. This is totally therapeutic because basically the anxiety of like, oh no, I can't solve it. I can't get through it. I don't know what to do. I'm afraid. It's like, no, I got to do this. Then I got to do this. And then I got to help the other three people. And then I got to get out of here. And it suddenly takes this, like, all this other stuff goes away. And she can go and play matches of Dead by Daylight. And her stress level just goes down. Because it really is fun to escape. And games like Dead by Daylight, there's other games that are like it to do that, where you have this opportunity to accomplish something and then beat a boogeyman, sometimes literally, and get out. And they're not necessarily to me, the best ones aren't very long. They're not super complicated. It's about getting that quick in and out, and then you win. And watching her do that has made me rethink some of the things that I get from games and some of that dopamine that you get, where it's not just about like, okay, I'm going to open this pack of magic cards and I'm going to need to see what's in the magic. You know, like, it's not that. It's about like, okay, I'm going to try and construct something that is difficult to accomplish something, because I want to challenge myself to do more than just play. When I'm playing Final Fantasy 14 right now, there's a class that I consider kind of, it's there. It's good. It does a lot of DPS. I don't get a lot out of it because it's...
Which class?
Reaper, new class. I'm going to get flamed for this, whatever. I don't find it challenging at all. I find it really boring because it's super simple.
Okay.
Where I'm going to go play Samurai, and it's not. There's like a 20 cast opening rotation, and you got to do it in a precise order. If you screw it up, you screw up your resource and you're going to have trouble and all stuff. And it's like, it's stressful, but like when I do it right, it feels really good. And
I think you hit the nail on the head with the comment of, I want to challenge myself to do more than game.
Yeah. To do more than the game. And like, you know, God love my stepson. He wants the power fantasy of like, no, I'm going to crush everything. Like, because it's also like, where are you in your life?
I am your Lord Rob Halford, and you shall bow to me.
You shall bow to me as I destroy you. You know, like, he doesn't want to, like, he's not a fan of a lot of Souls-like games because they're just punishing.
You have to die.
Punishing. Right. Well, it's not just so much that you have to die, it's that they, like, I'm going to spit on you, and you're going to try 30 more times.
Right.
And maybe you'll get it. You know,
that's why I think Hades is such a good game. It's a Souls-like game that rewards you for dying and progresses you with story. Whereas other games, it's like, hey, you died. Maybe you get an ability point. Okay, go do it again.
Yeah, go do it again. Whereas like Souls-like, well, like Dark Souls and the like are really hard to, for me, I just don't like them because I am a big fan of a game like Breath of the Wild was good at this. Of showing you what you were supposed to do.
Right.
And educating you so that when you come back, you understand it better. And the actual Dark Souls games do that. They show you how to progress and get better.
Yeah, I don't rip offs of them, though. The clones by a bajillion, quite literally.
Are just like, no, you're dead now because we're hard. Yep. And it's like, you didn't. I don't know what to do.
Souls-like is actually a term that would turn me off from a game.
Yeah, for me, too.
I like the Dark Souls games. Mm-hmm. I just think that most of the things that have come after it have never captured the original luster of what that was. Very much like, you know, we mentioned Love Letter earlier on the board game side. Love Letter, when that came out, nobody would think twice about making an 18-card game the game of the year. And yet it was an amazing game.
Yeah.
And it fell into that cloning phase of like, hundreds of people tried to make a 20 or less card game that was super, super fun. And it's like, you're late to the party, pal. Like, these guys have already done it, and they did it really well, and no one's going to knock them off the mountain. Slay the Spire is another good example.
Yeah, Slay the Spire is fantastic. Slay the Spire is
so good. Like, I don't even understand why people wouldn't own this game. It's so good. And yet, there are literally hundreds of clones of deck-building roguelikes that are out there. And some of them are very good. In fact, I just played one called Grifflands, which was really, really fun. And I'm looking at one called The Amazing American Circus, which kind of looks mediocre, but at least looks interesting and different. But no, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's you don't. Gaming is an escape from anxiety and the anxieties of life. Mm-hmm. Why would you want to make a game that gives you more of the thing you're trying to escape?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you want to, you know, dig in and, like you said, do more than just game?
Yes. Yeah.
The game is just a conduit for you to release things or gain things, dopamine rush, things like mm-hmm. that, right?
Well, it's all about, like, finding those things that bring you joy and make you happy. And
amen.
What is it that you're going after, and what is it that you're trying to accomplish when you do this? Are you sitting down to be super challenged because that's where your fun is? Our friend Thomas, he likes to win. And he wins. Yep. And he wins and he wins and he wins. Thing is, when you play him, he's a lot of fun to play with.
Totally.
You know, he's gonna cut your throat, but he's gonna try and win.
He might beat you in a game of college football 63-3, but he'll make you smile the whole way. If that's a good reference.
have a good time doing it. And like that's the thing that so much about gaming is like I know people that really like to raid hardcore in MMOs. It's just, I get paid for my job.
Right.
You know, like I don't wanna pay to take on another one. And it's not as fun for me. For other people, it's great. And for me, it's more casual. It's more find systems that I enjoy, and you know, build on them and play them, and have a good time. And watching my wife like go through and really enjoy Dead by Daylight for the aspects of like what I survived. B, I helped all these other people, and C, I'm showing them how to do it. And then you get into the weird shenanigans where like the killer is doing a daily mission and they're not even trying to kill you. They're just trying to get their daily points. And like she talks about like the killers are all themed like, you know, Michael Myers, and some of like she says that anytime it's the killer from Scream, it's always hilarious. Because it's already making goofy faces. But the player will almost invariably like play into that. Like, what are you doing? You know, it's really interesting. And
that's awesome.
It's awesome.
You want to know a fun fact?
What's that?
I just found out that the guy from Reddit, I found out that the guy who played the original Michael Myers in the original Halloween, his new cat
mm-hmm.
is named Michael Meowers.
If anybody gets to do it, it's him.
I love the man. I think it's brilliant.
If anybody gets to do it, it's him.
That's solid. Well, that's cool. Well, you know what? I've never played Dead by Daylight, but now I'm going to want to go play it. So,
for some reason, it just doesn't. I don't know. I'm
still stuck on Children of Morta and Expedition Rome that we talked about last time. They're still both super, super fun and amazing.
Like you said, addictions are bad. I still play 14.
There you go.
I bought the League of Legends game made by the Battle Chasers guys.
The Ruined King.
I couldn't remember the name of it.
Play that game. It's so good. Illaoi is I love Illaoi.
Well, especially
so good.
And then a friend of mine was like, "Yeah," and her name is Jaina Proudmoore.
I don't know.
Laura Bailey. Laura Bailey.
Okay.
Like the reason I watch Critical Role at all was because, Laura Bailey's on it? Yeah, okay, I'll watch that. Yeah, like Laura Bailey. She voice acts in that. And
nice.
I still haven't watched it because I suck. Anyway.
That's okay. You'll get there. You'll get there.
But ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for playing along tonight.
Hopefully, this is a lot of fun, man.
Hopefully you have kept up with the home game and continue with the home game.
I hope you're doing better with the five count than I am.
Yeah, same, same.
But they're fun. I like these things. I mean, those questions, even though we may not get them always right, they're really fun and entertaining to talk about. And they kind of feed into a lot of things we talk about later.
Yeah. And I mean, seriously, Dame Judi Dench.
I know. I got to go look that up.
And Vin Diesel.
Yeah. Yep.
There's no official like yes they did. It's
that means yes they did.
Oh yeah, totally. Absolutely. right? Yeah. And like, there's a great, I've probably closed it. I'll have to send it to you. There's an amazing quote from Vin Diesel. I'm going to read it because it's that good. Somebody asked Vin Diesel in the press for that movie leading up. He was like, is it true you're really into Dungeons and Dragons? No, I never played D&D. For some reason, they thought that I played D&D for 20 years. They thought I spent years playing Barbarians, Witch Hunters, the Arcanum. They thought I played D&D back in the 70s when it was just the basic D&D set. They thought I continued to play D&D when it became Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. They thought I played D&D when there were only three books, The Player's Handbook, The Monster Manual, and The Dungeon Master's Guide. They thought I played D&D as I continued on to the Unearthed Arcanum, Oriental Adventures, Sea Adventures, Wilderness Adventures. They thought I played D&D when, at the time when D&Ds and Demigods was a brand new book. They thought I played D&D when I used to get up to a place called The Complete Strategist in New York. Mouths to the reviewer, I'm really into D&D.
That's awesome. Yeah,
it's absolutely great. And, you know, like, having fun with the five count is really fun. I stress out. I don't stress out about getting topics together. I stress out about the five count. When I got to write it for you, I'm like, oh, man.
I do, too. I stress out more about finding the questions than actually answering the questions. So we're on the same page with that.
All right.
Next week, we'll have another five count. Next week, we'll have more things to talk about. We hope that you, as fellow friends and lovers of everything we love, are here with us, listening to us. Go find the original five count, whichever one it was, and see if you can catch up from there. We really appreciate everybody listening. But the outro will tell you how to find us on all the social medias. It'll also tell you, if you stick around for the after credit spoilers, who the show was not brought to you by.
And the important piece is we are not The important part is we're not brought to you by those people.
We are not brought to you by any of those people ever. But we appreciate those who don't sponsor us. So thank you all for listening. Be good. Do good.
Thanks for wasting your time with us tonight.
This episode of Main Event Meeples was not brought to you in part by A&W Restaurants and their new hire, Danhausen. Very nice, very evil, very root beer. Nor was it brought to you in part by Wordle, because the New York Times bought it before we could. Thanks so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast and plan on joining us for many more. In the meantime, reach out to us anywhere you like on social media. You can find us on Twitter at Main Event Meeple or on Instagram or Facebook by searching Main Event Meeples. But until we see you next time, we hope all your moments are the main event.